craft. Tickets and further information is available at cap.ucla.edu and kpfk.org.
It shines with that. It settles that.
You're listening to Fiercely Independent KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and on the web at kpfk.org.
This is Feminist Magazine, a weekly radical radio show and podcast produced by a diverse collective of feminists. And every week, we bring you a mix of intersectional stories and guests to help you resist and engage. Because we want you to know a little bit more about Feminist Magazine, who we are and how we do it, and why you'll want to support feminist radio on the air on KPFK every week. And I'm Lynn Harris-Ballin, your host today, and this is what feminism can sound like.
Walk it out and move on day.
Over 2 million homes across California depend on the essential care provided by more than 300,000 domestic workers in the state. Yet they remain without health and safety protections in the workplace. Care workers, who ensure our economies have a healthy workforce, are ironically and sadly marginalized and invisibilized by intentional exclusion from worker protection laws. These exclusions are a remnant of the United States' legacy of slavery and discrimination against black and brown immigrant women workers that continue on in California State's Labor Code today. To address this historic inequality, last year, the California Domestic Workers Coalition, or the CDWC, worked with the National Domestic Workers Alliance to create SB 686, organized a historic rally of over 600 domestic workers in Sacramento in August this year to push Governor Newsom to sign SB 686 into a bill. I got to sit down with Kimberly Alvarenga, the executive director of the California Domestic Workers Coalition, to discuss why SB 686 is important and how domestic worker organizing is one of the most important and feminist movements in the country. So hi, Kimberly. Welcome to our show. We'd love to begin by having you share a little bit about the work that you're doing with the California Domestic Workers Coalition. What is the CDWC? How did it come about? And what is the work that y'all are doing?
Sure. First, I just wanted to say thank you, Preeti, for having me on the show. Really appreciate it. Well, the California Domestic Workers Coalition was founded in about 2006. And we're a statewide coalition of organizations that have programs within them that support domestic workers. Some of those centers are also worker centers, day labor centers. As the coalition is also made up of employers and other labor allies. And we work to advance the rights and the dignity of domestic workers that are primarily immigrant women of color that do this important work. And one of the reasons that we organize is that domestic workers have been historically excluded from many labor protections. And these exclusions really are rooted in a history of racism in this country. Back in the 1930s, when there were a lot of industries or workers obtaining legal protections or worker rights, it was Southern lawmakers that refused to support any policies that included two industries at the time, domestic workers and farm workers. And at that time, it was Black women that were doing domestic work. And so these Southern lawmakers refused to support these policies. And ever since then, domestic workers have been advocating to become equal, to be equal under the law when it comes to labor protections. And so we're a member-based coalition, and our membership really decides the priorities of our work and the direction of our work. And that's what we do.
Great. And more recently, 2 weeks ago, you had this amazing rally in Sacramento around pushing for a bill called SB 686. What is this bill? What are its demands? And how will it help? How will it support domestic workers?
Yeah, SB 686, the Health and Safety for All Workers Act, authored by Senator Maria Elena Durazo and principal co-authored by Assemblymember Wendy Carrillo. What the bill does, I just shared that there is just a legacy of exclusion from many labor protections for domestic workers. And unfortunately, domestic workers are essentially the last industry that is still excluded from basic occupational health and safety protections and rights in the country, and obviously in California. And domestic workers do the work that makes all other work possible. They take care of our most precious resources and in our lives. They take care of our homes. They take care of our elders. They take care of our children, people with disabilities, and they do not have any recourse if they are injured in the home as a workplace. And so the coalition has been advocating to really bring domestic workers under the jurisdiction of Cal OSHA so that we could actually work to prevent injuries and illnesses from happening. This issue really, really became a huge priority for our members in 2020, when we here in California had COVID was raging. And along with COVID, we had wildfires that were raging as well. And domestic workers were put in very difficult situations, many of them losing their lives. They lost so much work overnight. And those that were able to stay at work had to risk their lives every time they went to work. And so to do that without any health and safety guidance or protection from the government is just unacceptable. And so we've been advocating for a number of years now to really bring workers, give them that dignity, and that so that they would have the same rights that all other workers have.
Absolutely. And, I was blown away by attending this rally. I think there were at least 400, 500 people. 400 of y'all marched to the Capitol in Sacramento, demanding for this bill to be, addressed and signed. And some of the statistics that were shared at the press conference really struck me, right? Including that California has 700,000 domestic workers. Am I right?
Actually, California has approximately 350,000 domestic workers that work in the state. We have the largest density of domestic workers that are working in the entire country. It's a very large workforce that needs to be recognized for what it is. These are women that are working very hard, sustaining their own families, do very important work, and the work needs to be respected and valued and recognized and protected.
Right, absolutely. And, care work is what makes all the other work possible, right? It's actually the backbone for larger other work to happen effortlessly or seamlessly, yet it's the one that's most taken for granted, that's the least valued and invisibilized. And it's not a coincidence that it is largely women of color, poor women who do this work. So connecting the dots and making this issue more visible is thanks to groups like yours. And I also want to like really lift up all the other groups that were there that day, who are all part of your larger network. Can you also shine a light on who else is doing this work? I met so many groups who came from across California, from Southern California, and also the larger, and can you connect the dots to our listeners with the larger National Domestic Workers Alliance, just to get a sense of the incredible work that is happening on the ground to make this, to make these issues visible.
Yeah, it was a wonderful event at the mobilization that we had in Sacramento. Domestic workers came out from all over the state. We have a growing movement of domestic workers that are beginning to, or have been for a while, really organizing to learn more about their rights. They actively are involved in trainings, Know Your Rights trainings. Even as we go to Sacramento, they are the ones that are speaking to policymakers about how the lack of health and safety protections impacts them. And the work is deep, it's meaningful, and it's been reaching domestic workers across the state. So the coalition now, when we were first founded, I had about 7 organizations that we were working with, and that's grown to about 14 organizations in our movement across the state, where we do this deep work of outreaching to domestic workers that don't know about their rights, educating them, training them, making sure that they're able to advocate for themselves, because in the end, it's wonderful to pass policies, but in the end, it's the women themselves that are going to take a stand and make a difference and be able to enforce their own rights in the future. And that's one thing that they've shared with us, that they want to have the tools to be able to enforce their own rights, along, of course, with the responsibility that the government has as well. And along with domestic workers, we have been joined by employers that really also believe that this work is valuable work and it should be treated as such. So our movement has a growing participation of employers, along with like folks in organized labor. At the rally, we were so blessed to have like SEIU California with us and United Domestic Workers. AFSCME 3930 really support us and march with us as we're asking Governor Newsom and telling him that now's the time to actually make a difference and lead and sign SB 686 when it gets to his desk.
How can people who are educating themselves about this issue support the work y'all are doing at CDWC?
I would say you can go to our website, cadomesticworkers.org, and find out more information about like the work that we're doing, all of the educational materials that we have. We also have a lot of research that we've partnered with our research partners on for this industry. And join us. We're involved in a movement for dignity. And for, as you mentioned, the quality of care for those that provide it and also for those that receive it. There's a lot of talk about like how people value, how our culture should value and that we value care. But we need to put our what we say into action, by actually giving respect and putting resources into care, both protecting the workers that do this valuable work, but also providing resources for the people that most need it, like our elders and people with disabilities that depend on, they spend so much of their lives in this culture working as hard as they can. And in the end, they also need to have the appropriate care and respect. And so join us as we're advocating for health and safety rights and jump on our website and join our listserv as we're building a stronger movement.
That's great. And, you know, I have to say your website is such a wonderful resource of all the history of all the organizing you'll have done. And currently, I you know, as a feminist journalist tracking movements in the country, feminist movements in this country, I think the domestic workers movement is one movement that really gives a lot of hope and joy, because you'll have made so many strides in the last 10 or 15 years, right? Can you speak to the larger context of domestic worker organizing? Just paint a broad brushstroke on how domestic workers organizing has really built momentum over the years, in the last 10 or 15 years or so.
Yeah, I would say, like, I think that's what's been so inspirational. You know, there have been those that in the past have said that this industry could not be organized because it's disaggregate, meaning that you really, it's a workforce that works one-on-one inside of a private home. You don't have multiple workers. You can't find multiple workers under one roof. And there are a lot of power dynamics in the relationship between an employer and a worker. And despite all that, this movement is led by domestic workers, children of domestic workers and allies. And it's had significant impact, not only at the local level, but many of our domestic workers have gone on to, you know, build a national movement through the National Domestic Workers Alliance that has, I believe it's like 65 affiliate organizations across the country. Many of those or some of those affiliates are in California. But they are all across the country passing bills of rights for domestic workers at the statewide level in multiple states. And as well, currently there's a national domestic worker bill of rights in Washington, D.C., along with the work that the National Domestic Workers Alliance and our affiliates have done to advance the issue of care and making sure that there are resources, you know, for care. And that's not to even leave out the work that the movement has done basically across internationally. We have a strong international movement that has been organizing for many, many years. And so there's a lot of beauty in the work and a lot more to be done. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that I think really strengthens in our movement is that it's wonderful to pass policies, but it's really about building a movement that is rooted in knowledge, that we organize in knowledge, making sure that our domestic workers have the tools that they need to enforce their own rights, and that together we will change the culture to bring some dignity overall to this arena.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we're gonna walk it out.
You can support KPFK and our show today, Feminist Magazine. Just go to the kpfk.org website and click the donate button. It's easy. If you do that right now, your conscience is clear. You have done it for this fund drive, and then you can go back to listening to the rest of the show. And that is just one example of the kind of story we love to highlight. Feminist Magazine brings you voices like that, and also feminist artists and creatives, plus, of course, local activists telling you ways that you can take action, you know, grassroots action, and make a difference yourself. That is what we actually mean when we say at the top of our show every week that we're bringing you a mix of intersectional stories and guests to help you resist and engage. And you can support us to keep us doing that right now. You can just go to the kpfk.org website and click the donate button. You can give $10, $25, $50, $100, or become a sustaining member. We want to be a sustainable radio station. And so if you just give us your credit card, we do a monthly payment. You choose how much. And then it's a sustainable way to keep bringing you these stories. The site is kpfk.org, and there's a donate button. You are listening to Feminist Magazine on KPFK, 90.7 FM, and kpfk.org.
As a KPFK listener, you expect to hear smart conversations about important issues every time you turn on the radio. We bring you facts and analysis, not partisanship or hype, so you can form your own opinions on the news. You count on KPFK for informed, insightful reporting. Don't take coverage like this for granted. It's here for you, thanks to the generous financial support of our listeners. Support the programming you rely on right now by calling 818-985-5735 or contribute online at kpfk.org.
You're listening to Feminist Magazine on KPFK on 90.7 FM and kpfk.org. I'm your host today, Lynn Harris-Ballin. And coming up next...
a story about the single mom's collective, Motherful.
So I don't have family and I don't have the resources. So when you don't have the resources, you have to go and find them.
We're going to go to Central Ohio, where a single mom's collective hosts a resource pantry.
We're just looking for resources that we can just give to moms with no barriers to entry, with no requirements, you know? And so that's what we're all about.
I'm Amy Gastelum. Stay with us.
Things like that, and now I'm shopping. This is a fridge. This is where we have all our veggies. As you can see, the veggies. I want some blackberries.
It's a sunny Sunday morning. Rugi Ingade sorts through a refrigerator stocked with fresh berries and tomatoes. This is the Motherful Resource Pantry. She's one of a handful of women helping to stock the shelves before it opens at 10. But she's also shopping.
We have a lot of things for evening nights. Banana fritters. Look at this. I love mushrooms. I love raviolis. I'm taking this home. You know, even a dessert. Everything comes from Trader Joe's. We've got all of these to take home.
There are a few local companies that donate, but Rugi's right. Most of the food comes from Trader Joe's. They give away stuff they can't sell to local organizations. Motherful serves single moms like Rugi and their families. They know that having enough healthy food is especially important to kids' health and development. Here's one of the founders, Lisa Woodward.
Well, I'm super creative, and that's what I like to do is find ideas and think of ideas. I was a teen mom, but I was super... good at finding resources. I see some younger moms that are just having a harder time to like maneuver the path. And that was never really hard for me because of just how good I am at just finding things. And so I like to continue that on, just finding more resources. But that's me. Like, I like to find stuff.
When they first started, Lisa and her daughter Ginger would wake up early before school to pick up the food.
And then we would drive back home and I would get her out and get her dressed for school, take her to school, and then bring the food to the food pantry and put it away. So that's how, that's the beginnings of it. And then we finally hired someone to pick up the food every day because it was getting a lot. But we're happy to have it. And it's all high quality, yummy food.
Motherful doesn't check IDs or pay stubs, and they don't ration what people can take.
We have tons of fruits and vegetables. We get a lot of meat and eggs, some surprises. Sometimes Trader Joe's will give us buckets and buckets of flowers, or we get a whole lot of asparagus at once. You never know. You never know. But it's all good stuff. And our moms volunteer and just help it keep going, our pantry.
Besides food, the pantry is packed with diapers and baby formula. There's detergent, shampoo, and even clothing. Black Lives Matter signs hang from the rafters. It's organized enough to find the essentials, but unexpected treasures like romance novels also surface here. Motherful's pantry is sort of like going to an auntie's house and searching through the spare fridge she keeps in the garage. It's almost 10, time to open for business. Some of the helpers take off, but the ones who stay are hoping they're going to see some babies today.
Hey, that baby deserves all the pictures.
Make her pay. That's what I'm telling you.
Love you too. Hey, that baby deserves all the pictures.
The volunteers take a seat around a table, and they stay there until the early afternoon. Hearing them talk and laugh makes it cozy. Meanwhile, a young woman walks in.
What you getting?
Some lack because there's a shortage, so I'm just going to take a few.
Kay Riley stocks up on formula for her newborn daughter, Wisdom, then asks a volunteer for help finding the right size diapers.
Excuse me, sir. Do you know what size these might be?
Which size are you looking for?
Newborn.
The smallest ones we got, right?
Yes. It's just ones.
Yeah.
You can wear ones too, so that's fine.
On her way out, Kay stops when she sees a pile of books.
Have you gotten books from here before?
I have. I actually read one of them already, which is really good. And they have a book club as well. So.
Are you part of it?
I am not yet, but I tend to be after I get... I just had my baby, so after I get her settled with, I definitely tend to join their book club. They have a lot of good resources here. A lot.
She pockets a novel and heads to her car.
Would it be possible to sit in your car or my car for just a second to talk a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that okay?
Well, let me put this in my car.
Okay.
You can walk with me.
Cute purse.
Thank you.
Kay says she started coming to Motherful about 3 months ago, pretty late in her pregnancy. She's from a small town in Northeast Ohio, but she's in Columbus to go to school at Ohio State.
So, this definitely has been extremely helpful for me in my journey as a mother. So,
how so?
So, I don't have family and I don't have the resources. So, when you don't have the resources, you have to go and find them. And this has been a huge help. Not only, they offer diapers and all that good stuff, but they also offer community. And I think that's the most important thing, especially when you're a single mother by yourself. There's other single mothers that can relate to you. So I think that's the most important thing, that it offers community.
Some of the moms at the pantry today qualify for a government program called the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, also known as WIC. It's kind of like food stamps, but it's only for pregnant people and anyone whose children are under 5.
Are you using WIC?
I am. Yes, I am.
And what's that been like?
It's been very helpful, especially with a formula outage. It's still hard to find formula, but, you don't really have to worry about the price. That's been good.
Okay, full disclosure. I've been a public health mother-baby nurse for over 10 years. I've helped lots of people connect with WIC, and my mom used it in the 1980s. But I had never used it myself until pandemic lockdowns. I didn't love it.
I had a baby not too long ago, and I was using WIC. And for me and our family, it was about like $40 a month, basically, was kind of what it equaled out to.
Yeah.
Which isn't huge, I'll be honest.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't cover all of your
At all. But yeah, it doesn't. I have to agree with you, but a little bit is I'm still grateful for the little bit that it does provide, but it would be nice if they provide a little bit more, you know, but
yeah. And then one of the other things that I found using it too is that it can be kind of complicated because you have to buy certain foods and not every grocery store even.
Yes, I've definitely found that not every grocery store even takes WIC, and then you have to scan it, and then just a lot. I've definitely dealt with that. Just trying to find foods that qualify for WIC can be extremely hard and annoying.
I want to jump in here to explain what we're talking about. You can only use WIC to buy certain types of food. The idea here is that by limiting choices, WIC is guiding pregnant and parenting people to healthier food, like whole grain options. Also, participants have to make monthly visits to a nutritionist. That can be hard for busy parents. WIC sees itself as more of a health intervention than a food security program. And to be fair, studies have shown that WIC participants have less premature birth and low birth weight. But they have a big problem. Less than half the people who are eligible for WIC actually use it, about 43%. That's compared to 84% of eligible food stamps users, a program with much less restrictions and rules. It's difficult to know exactly why participation is so low, but as a user, I can tell you that besides the food restrictions and the mandatory visits, there's also a shaming factor.
And there were times when I would get to the register and the person ringing me up didn't really know how to ring up WIC.
Yeah.
And then it's like all your business is everybody's business.
Yes. It can be uncomfortable. That's happened to me, like, and they're screaming, well, I don't know how to use WIC. And they just scream out to the whole world. Why don't you just tell the whole world about my business? Why don't you? I think they definitely should train the individuals a little bit more on WIC. Definitely confidentiality as well. Not everyone wants people to know that they're on WIC. That's just the honest truth. And they should be able to know how to use
it. Because there's stigma. Yeah. Like, you don't know if the guy behind you in line is going to be like,
yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
For my tax dollars.
Yeah. And that's actually happened before with me.
So one time, Kay was shopping with her sister. They were at the register when the man in line behind them started to laugh.
And he was like, I'm glad my government or governmental, he said something about government, pays your food. And we just kept on walking. It was very uncomfortable for me. So, yeah. And I'm not used to that. So, yeah. Definitely confidentiality. Not everybody wants the people to know that they're on WIC, but it's nothing to be ashamed of. Honest. I had to learn that. I had to humble myself and learn. It's not a bad thing. It just has a negative connotation to it. Which is unfortunate because a lot of women do need WIC.
How did you convince yourself that it wasn't anything to be ashamed of? Where did that come from?
I guess it just came in from internalizing me and my own insecurities of using governmental assistance. Like, it's not, a lot of women use it, and it's okay to use it. Especially if you don't have the resources, what can you do? I didn't have the resources at the time, so. I mean, it's nothing to be ashamed of. Nothing at all. You're a new mom, you're a woman, and I'm a single mom at that, so I'm just using the resources that they've given, you know what I mean? So,
which don't even cover your whole bill.
It doesn't even cover my whole bill.
Not even half.
Not even a quarter, I don't think.
Each state has their own restrictions and rules when it comes to WIC. And some of them don't feel like a health decision. They feel like a budget decision. In Indiana, where I live, you have to buy the least expensive eggs and milk available. You can get organic produce, but you're not allowed to buy organic shelf-stable food or organic baby food. And it can be hard for stores, too. Each grocery store that wants to be a vendor must stock a minimum amount of WIC-approved foods at all times. It can be hard for some local independent stores to meet that requirement, especially international markets. For them, most of the brands and types of food available through WIC are culturally irrelevant for their customers. Here's Rugi again.
You know, Being an immigrant, it's a whole new process. It's like being reborn. You have to first unlearn and then learn. When you come here, you've got all kind of information. It took me a while to go through the right channels. I even thought if you take benefits, you will never be documented because they hold it against you. So it takes you a while to just realize that this is just for the child, you know. So I had week with my second child.
Rugi is Muslim and likes to shop at halal stores.
They don't take week, so it's a problem. I don't know what should be done. Small businesses working with week and working with all small business owners so week could be accessible to the people. They have to go to a regular grocery stores. And most of the time, when I first started, what I was getting wouldn't even work for me. But I still have just to take it and try it.
You're listening to a story about the single mom's collective, Motherful.
You can support KPFK and our show today, Feminist Magazine. Just call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK and make your pledge. Or you can go to the kpfk.org website, click that big red donate button. It's easy. Keep public radio strong here in Southern California by donating to KPFK right now. And you can become a member today or renew that membership you've let lapse. You can go to kpfk.org, donate, or 818-985-5735. And this Black History Month, we have some amazing thank you gifts. Today, we want to tell you about, for a $150 pledge to KPFK, we will send you a unique Angela Davis pack. This is a copy of the book, Freedom is a Constant Struggle, Ferguson, Palestine, and the Foundations of a Movement, plus almost 2 hours of Angela Davis live in Watts. And this is a unique recording. It was recorded by KPFK, speaking right here in Watts. This is local. This is from our archive. And that, combined with a book for a $150 gift, this will be our thank you to you. This book, Freedom is a Constant Struggle, is so worth owning. It's collected essays, interviews, and speeches by the world-renowned activist and scholar Angela Y. Davis. And so call 818-985-5735. Pledge $150 support for KPFK and Feminist Magazine. And we'll send you this book and the MP3. In the book, she's reflecting on the importance of Black feminism, intersectionality, and prison abolitionism for today's struggles. So all you have to do, call 818-985-5735 and pledge for $150. Or you can get this thank you gift as a sustainer. You can pledge $15 a month for a year and you can get this gift. In both her book, Freedom is a Constant Struggle, and also in that speech in Watts, she's talking about how we're facing a world of outrageous justice. She challenges us to imagine and build a movement for human liberation. And in doing so, she reminds us that freedom truly is a constant struggle. You can be reading that book, listening to her words, pledge a gift of $150, and we'll send that to you. Call 818-985-5735.
It's Lupe. I listen to you guys every morning, and I've been listening to you guys since I was 19 years old. I listen to Democracy Now! And the one in the afternoon, I always forget. Background briefing. There you go. Yeah, that
one. All right, Lupe.
Hey, this is Wanda Sykes, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. And if you'd like to shell out a few bucks, you know, keep us up and running so I can have nice conversation in a cool voice like this. Pick up the phone and call 818-985-5735. 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Thank you.
You're listening to Feminist Magazine on KPFK on 90.7 FM and kpfk.org. I'm your host today, Lynn Harris-Ballin. And coming up next...
a story about the single mom's collective, Motherful. In September, President Biden took to the podium to talk food policy.
Welcome to the White House Conference on Hunger, Nutrition, and Health.
Good morning. Thank you very much. It's been over 50 years since President Nixon convened the original White House Conference on Hunger, Nutrition, and Health. That single conference and the laws that inspired it led to transformational change that has helped millions of Americans live healthier lives for generations.
So WIC came out of that first conference and was up and running by 1974. Since then, lots of changes have been made to the program, but the changes have been to which kind of cereal. How many grams of sugar in the juice? Never. Should we really be dictating the foods pregnant and parenting people can eat? This year, even more program changes are coming, mostly to get people to sign up. You can visit our website to hear an interview with leadership at the USDA for more there. Meanwhile, the collective at Motherful is holding it down for single moms in Central Ohio.
We don't tell you how to vote, but we are an open, progressive, non-profit.
Here's Rugi again.
We support the Black Lives Matter. We support the LGBTQ plus community. We support all immigrants, no matter what their status is. We would support any woman, no matter what her choice is, but we are a pro-choice movement. So we're just an open movement, inclusive, that try to be also wholesome, not only work with moms, but try to take care of all the needs that a single mother's family can have.
The food pantry is just one of the ways Motherful supports single moms. Their core values include reparative justice and health care for all. They host community dinners and bi-weekly Zoom calls with guest speakers. It's more than a place to find food or baby items. It's a politically aware hug around about 325 single moms and their families.
They're not being CEOs. It's mothers like us. We're all together. We are consulted at every level. It's a partnership. I have my own programs here. I get to have inputs and to say, this is what I want to see happen. And they make it happen. I make it happen. They give me the space, the voice. We talk. We decide this is something that is relevant, and we will do it.
Like I said, community is the best resource, I would say. Just community, knowing that others have went through the same thing I've went through, is definitely comforting.
What does that mean for you when you keep saying community? Like, what does that really look like on a day-to-day for you?
If you're feeling down postpartum, you can always ask a friend to, you know, go out. People still check up on me in the community. And not only that, they have an app for Motherful where you can tell your feelings and other women can, you know, reply and give you hope. That's what...
Have you been using that?
I have. I have a lot.
In the middle of the night?
In the middle of the night. Like, I'm feeling a little depressed. So...
yeah.
But, yeah.
I know about that 3 a.m. thing where you just wake up.
Yeah, that's...
what is this?
No, it's a real thing. It's real. It's real.
It's like, where's my mommy?
Back at the food pantry, I sat down with Heidi Howes. She's co-founder and co-director of Motherful. It's time for her baby to nurse, so we settle into chairs in an upstairs room. Kids are playing, and somebody's vacuuming downstairs. I asked Heidi how WIC relates to Motherful's plan for food justice.
We do have a partner through WIC that we just recently connected with, who is a mom who works there. And so we're looking into it, but, you know, we're just looking for resources that we can just give to moms with no barriers to entry, with no requirements, you know. It's like, you need it, here it is. And so that's what we're all about. Personally, I may qualify for WIC right now. I'm not sure. I've had WIC in the past, but I actually didn't like WIC in the past because it was dairy and we don't eat dairy, or I don't eat dairy. But I know now they do have fresh vegetables, and that was something that I think I got on the tail end when my last child was born. But I haven't signed up for WIC now.
I was a teen mom, and I definitely took place with WIC for multiple times because I have three daughters.
Here's Lisa Woodward again. She and Heidi started Motherful together. I asked her how Motherful's resource pantry is different from the WIC program.
How is it different? This is a collective and a community. When I was going through the WIC system, there was not any sisterhood with other of the WIC clients. Our food pantry and garden, it's more free. You can get how much you need, and you can come multiple times. We don't have any like direct nutritional counseling like WIC has, but we do have moms that they share information all the time just about healthy eating. There's also a lot of different local orgs that deal with nutrition. And so we're connected. So when they have programming, we do post it on our site. But we partner up with WIC for their farmers markets. So we were there. Folks were coming to get food, and then they would also find out about our programming too. And we look forward to tabling with them again as needed. Most of the people that come through WIC are new moms or pregnant moms. So that's really good for us because most of our moms have are not adding to their family. And so it's good that we have those, can help those moms too that are new moms, that, and you're a single mom. That's like a double, that's a double whammy. So we encourage those connections.
If you could imagine like food for single mothers, someone such as yourself, like in your wildest dreams, like what would you want for someone in your position but from the government?
I would say like for a period of time, just covering, I would just say like at least half of the expenses. It can be extremely hard. I'm not saying if you're working and if you're able to work, I would say half. But if you're not able to work, I feel like due to you having a child and stuff, I feel like the government should assist mothers, single mothers, especially when they're single. You can't go to work because you just had a baby. I think they should.
Some people call that unpaid labor.
When
you're taking care of your baby, it is work, right? Like you're working.
Yeah, that's exactly.
You just don't get paid.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Not even having the baby, just carrying the baby itself, having to worry about your fat feet and then everything else that comes with pregnancy. That's hard work. That is extremely hard work. Having to deal with the insecurities of your body after. That's hard work that you have to do internally. There's so much components to pregnancy, even after pregnancy, that women have to deal with. That's work to me. That's work. So
yeah,
that's labor for me.
Whew. You know, the ultimate dream would be like every household has a garden. Like there's a gardening committee that comes to your house and puts the garden in, and it comes every week and helps you weed and teaches you. And then also fresh, healthy food is delivered to mom's houses, period. Preferably cooked. That's actually what we would love to do here at Motherful, is to have prepared foods that we can just give to moms, because it's impossible to do all of these things, you know, as one person in a family. And why not, you know? So bring the fresh, healthy food right to the doors of moms so that they can, you know, take a bath instead of cooking that meal, you know, because it's really, really hard work being a mom, you know, raising children, and you're sore, your body hurts, you know, just need a minute to rest and decompress. And so you can be in, you know, your full state of love and care to give that to your children, you know, because if moms are good, everybody's good.
Yeah. Just the highest quality of produce and the prepared food thing, that's definitely high on my list. And just someone to help our garden just multiply.
Back in the garage, everybody packs up for the day. Rugi likes to check in at the inn to see about the tomatoes. If there are any left, she takes them home.
Sunday, so I ran out of tomato paste, and today I want to make somebody.
Oh, yeah.
He needs a lot of tomato. I make everything from scratch.
Yeah, well, our ultimate goal as an organization is to build a co-housing village here in Columbus, Ohio, and then to take the model of the Motherful organization and build chapters throughout the world, you know, so that other moms can be empowered to work together for better lives for themselves and their children, and also ultimately to uplift the matriarchy. Yeah. I just see that mothers in power with each other and others, as opposed to power over, which is a patriarchal model. You know, if mothers are in power, like, people are going to be loved. They're going to be fed. They're going to be housed. They're going to be clothed. They're going to be taken care of, you know? And it's just, it's a no-brainer. So if we can get moms out from under the invisibility and out from under the straight-up slavery of reproductive labor and get them into leadership, you know, while they're also being taken care of, you know, and bring children into our common spaces again too, you know, I think that that's going to change the world when moms are running things. It's going to be so much better, and it's just a matter of time.
You seem convinced.
I mean, don't you see it? You know, it has to happen. We can't, I mean, it's that or destruction. Absolute destruction, you know, unless we bring the matriarchal ways back into the forefront. And by that I mean valuing life, valuing the sacred life of all, and love and nurturing and care and interconnectedness and all these things that, you know, colonialism, capitalism, patriarchy, white supremacy, all these things that have been suppressed and killed, and due to those powers, like, when we bring back the matriarchy, when we bring back the matriarchal ways, then we'll be able to save our planet and save ourselves. So it has to happen, or else it's death, you know? Matriarchy is life.
So you can support KPFK and our show today, Feminist Magazine. Just go to the kpfk.org website and click that donate button, or call 818-985-5735 or 818-985-KPFK. And that is just one example of the kind of story we love to highlight. So Feminist Magazine brings you voices like that, and also feminist artists and creatives, plus, of course, local activists telling you ways that you can take action, you know, grassroots action, and make a difference yourself. That is what we actually mean when we say at the top of our show every week that we're bringing you a mix of intersectional stories and guests to help you resist and engage. So during this fund drive, and we're limiting the number of interruptions and preemptions so that your favorite programs like this one can keep going on the air, providing you with the information and the news that you can only get on KPFK. So please show your support for the station and for this approach. We want you to kind of vote with your actions and say, yeah, we want to keep having programming. But the way we'll know that is if you support us. We want to keep doing this approach to fundraising, but you can do your part by pledging online, kpfk.org, or call 818-985-5735. If it's been a while since you last donated, even if you've never donated before, if you've been listening but you've never donated before, there's no time like the present. Don't procrastinate. So do it now and make a generous donation, as generous as you can, to keep KPFK part of your daily life, to keep Feminist Magazine part of your weekly life. We're in challenging times and your contribution really is vitally important. So we thank you for your help and support. We thank you on behalf of all of the other listeners and all of us right here at KPFK. We work as a collective of diverse voices and contributors. And like that whole thing of diverse voices is not just a set of differences, but a way to kind of come together, collaborate, and make something bigger and better. And that's what we do on our show, Feminist Magazine. And that's what KPFK does as well. So it means that there's a bunch of viewpoints giving you, our listeners, all kinds of perspectives, stories, and guests every week. And it goes across generations too. We mentor new contributors here on Feminist Magazine. We love doing that. We love teaching radio skills like interviewing, engineering, and editing to young college students, to grassroots feminists from different communities across the city. And all of us who are part of the show are activists in different communities around LA, but we give our time and sweat to FemMag because we believe in radio. Go to kpfk.org and click donate if you want this to keep happening, to keep going, and these kinds of stories, this kind of work, to be there every week for you. We're inviting you to give $100 or be a sustainer. And that is amazing. You give us your credit card, you say how much you want to donate every month, and then it's automatically taken out. You don't have to worry about it. We have a sustainable base that we can work from, that we can build from. And all through this past lockdown and pandemic, we have all kept going remotely for you. So show us a little love, won't you? Go to kpfk.org and click that donate button right now to support the show. So we're wrapping up another edition of Feminist Magazine. Thanks to all our guests and contributors today. And now is your last chance to support KPFK in this hour, in the Feminist Magazine hour. So if you like what you just heard on Feminist Magazine, please support us to keep doing that. Go to kpfk.org and click the donate button or call 818-985-5735. And thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to KPFK, your listener-sponsored radio station.
KPFK is beginning to wind down our fund drive.
Time is running out for us to reach our goal and cover our expenses.
So we really need to call on those of you who are in a position to do so to pledge your support to help this important community institution continue.
If you haven't already, please make your pledge now. You can do that at kpfk.org/donate.
If you'd rather call in your support, you can do so as well at 818-985-5735.
KPFK has been addressing the world's most critical issues since 1959. So if you're passionate about humanity and this planet, please donate at any level you can.
Your financial support provides the stability that this station requires to continue bringing you important fact-based journalism unfiltered by corporate demands.
Every contribution counts, whether it's a one-time gift or a monthly installment.
Once more, to make your pledge right now, please go to kpfk.org/donate.
Or call us at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Thank you for supporting KPFK,
your Pacifica radio station.
Mm-hmm. Support comes from the Alex Theater, presenting the Ravi Shankar Ensemble on March 31st at 8 p.m. Curated by Anushka and Sukanya Shankar, this debut U.S. tour celebrates the legendary Ravi Shankar's music with rare archival visuals and live performance featuring sitar, tabla, and other traditional Indian classical instruments. This will be a very special evening honoring Ravi Shankar's enduring legacy. More information and tickets are available at itsmyseat.com.